Hello, welcome to Trumpet World. We've seen a major attack on a Christmas market in Germany. We've seen Russia shoot down another airliner. And Donald Trump has moved on from annexing Canada to annexing Panama. We're going to look at all of the most important news for the last 7 days on today's Trumpet World. Well, welcome to our very first regular live Trumpet World. No longer will we have news 24 hours old, kind of getting to you out of date as we edit the show and try to keep up with the incredibly rapid pace of events. And of course, we know that many of you cannot drop everything and come join us live, and we'll still have the show posted later. And I'm sure that's probably how most of you are watching this, but at least this will get the show up online much more quickly and leave us much less time for getting out of date. And for those of you, we didn't advertise this massively, but we are going to start going live on a regular basis. 2:30 for me here in the UK, Greenwich Mean Time. I think it's 8:30 Central Standard Time in the US. If you're not in one of those two narrow slices of the world, I'll leave it to you to figure out what time zone you're coming in. And I'm going to start with some breaking news that if we had recorded it yesterday, I guess we wouldn't have been able to cover, and that is that Germany's parliament officially dissolved with their elections now officially set for February 23rd. So that was this morning. The German president got up and made that announcement, and he said, "It is precisely in difficult times like these that stability requires a government capable of taking action and a reliable majority in parliament." He continued, "Therefore, I am convinced that for the good of our country, new elections are the right way." Trouble is, doesn't look like we're going to get, what did he call it, a stable, a reliable majority in parliament. You know, all the polls show it's incredibly unlikely that that is going to be the outcome, and that Germany will probably have these elections and end up exactly back where they are now, with a divided parliament and without a stable majority, and still needing a way to deal with these quote-unquote difficult times. So, you know, watch this election in Germany. This is a critical subject that we've pointed quite a few times to Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry's article in the latest, or not quite the latest, we've got a new magazine now up, but in the January Trumpet print edition after Donald Trump's election, Watch Germany. And he goes through there exactly why we're watching for the rise of a strong leader in Germany, how we're not expecting him to come into power through the regular system, through elections. The Bible indicates that he's going to come into power through complicated, unstable coalition negotiations. And really, I think that is what we are primed for with what we're seeing in German politics. And on this note of politics, and even on his statements, I thought it was interesting that the German president, in his speech, he cited the example of Romania. And he warned that he said that something along the lines of the threat of misinformation is out there, and that we've got to watch for foreigners interfering in our elections. And I thought that was interesting because, well, Jeremiah and I might have a bit of egg on our face on this story, where the two of us, we were talking on a show, I think about a week and a half ago, maybe 2.5 weeks, about Russia stealing Romania's election, and then Romania taking the, what I think is absurd and disproportionate step of then just cancelling the entire election. But actually, there's some pretty interesting evidence coming out now that it wasn't the Russians at all. So, Snoop.ro, they're, as far as I can tell, a reputative investigative news site in Romania with no, you know, they're not one of these Russian sock puppet news sites. And they were out there saying, or they dug up some interesting information. So that basically Russia was accused of using TikTok to steal Romania's election, and that they used all of these influencers to and all of these different, this whole network of shady people with links to Russia on TikTok, to boost the election to this fringe kind of far right pro-Russian candidate, Kalin Georgescu. Now, Snoop.ro is saying, well, actually, it wasn't the Russians. It was another mainstream Romanian party, because Romania's elections are two stages. You have the normal elections and then you have the runoff. And this mainstream party figured that Georgescu would be the easiest opposition candidate for them to beat. They wanted to go up against him in the runoff election. And so they hired all of these people with dodgy links to go and promote Georgescu so that they could beat, so that they, he would be their opponent in the runoff and they could beat him. And that actually he, Georgescu, didn't break any rules and the Russians weren't supporting him. Now, you know, the story is they had a single source in Romania's finance ministry that was talking about this. And then they then followed this up with an investigation of their own that they said unearthed evidence of this. There are a few other sites like Politico that have picked this up. So it, you know, there are mainstream sources that have followed this. But I would like to see a little more confirmation before I write on this more and talk about this more. But maybe in the coming week or two, we'll have to have a We Were Wrong segment on this. If that Snoop.ru ends up being correct. But what I think is, you know, they published this 4 or 5 days ago. Politico, you know, mainstream media have picked this up. No one in Europe, none of the politicians are reacting, or the European Union is still holding their investigations into TikTok. Germany's president is still saying Russia is trying to steal elections. So as you see Germany head up to elections, I mean, watch this trend as well of election interference. They just cancelled Romania's elections. Will they find some other way to do something like this in Germany's elections, blaming misinformation? And I think this is where the main story for Europe, and I'm sorry to, especially to other panelists for kind of starting the show with a bit of a monologue, but I think we have to start the show with this story. The attack in Magdeburg that came in on Friday last week, just after this show went out. And that, you know, obviously, I think has been one of the most dramatic stories of the week, where a 9-year-old boy was murdered. Four other women, I think they were older women, they died. There were 200 injured, as this car just plowed through a Christmas market in Magdeburg. And Talib Al, he's being called Talib A by the German media. I'll just go with that, not because I'm concerned necessarily of protecting the privacy of the perpetrator, but because I don't want to butcher his last name. He came in there trying to kill as many civilians as he could. And it's a story that first shocked Germany, and now it's become this story that's become this big debatable issue, because he's Saudi Arabian. So this was the story that initially went all around the world. Saudi Arabian carried out this attack. Then the news comes out later that he at least claims to be a convert away from Islam, and that he's actually an atheist, and that he's been an anti-Islam activist. This, he does seem to have tweeted along those lines, if you look at his social media history, for quite a long time, quite consistently. Then people managed to dig out one or two tweets that he had that were pro-AFD, that were pro-Elon Musk. And so this was now the headline. He was a right-wing Elon Musk supporter. That, I think, was pretty overblown. But that was the That was what was going on. And it became this big debate about, well, who is he? Is this idea that he's a Muslim misinformation? Does the German government need to be cracking down on misinformation? And that has dominated the news cycle. The other thing that has dominated the news cycle in the mainstream media is, why was there a gap in the bollards? Why could his car drive through? We need to have bollards protecting all of the markets. And we need to not have gaps that people can drive through and get in there. But I think all of this misses the point. And once again, we see even the mainstream discourse in Germany missing the point. You have an asylum seeker, you have a migrant from the Middle East who is in Germany. And with every day that goes by, we see more and more things come out where there were warning signs. There were people reporting him to the authorities that there should have been a lot more concern, that maybe he should have even been deported. All of this around him, and no action was taken. Nothing was done. And that, I think, is the much bigger, more important story where, well, this is what he wrote in 2003. Again, this is, nothing was done to stop him after this. He said, Germany is the only country other than Saudi Arabia that chases female Saudi asylum seekers all over the world to destroy their lives. Revenge will come soon. Even if it costs me my life, I will make the German nation pay the price for the crimes committed by its government against Saudi refugees. And a lot of people who worked with him over the years came forward and said, this guy is crazy. He claims to be helping Muslim women that have converted away from Islam, but it's just he just then uses that to harass us and to attack us. So whatever his philosophical, religious or whatever background is, he is a crazy guy. He is one that they were warned about. He is one that Germany did nothing. And this is turbocharging the debate about immigration as we come into that German election that has just been called. But also it's turbocharged this debate about misinformation, because there's a lot of mainstream sources again saying, well, Elon Musk and Twitter is spreading misinformation. We need to have more control over what people have said online. And you look at that in context of Romania, where they just cancelled their election because of what was said online. And you look at what Mr. Flurry was writing in that article that I referenced, and all of that is based on the Bible. And we've covered that a few times on this show, based on Daniel chapter 8, based on this passage in Daniel chapter 11 that talks about there being a strong man coming into power by flatteries who they don't give the honor of the kingdom. He comes into power through unorthodox means. Are you going to see an election cancelled? It's certainly worth thinking about. And I did cover for I think most of our viewers will know, but if you don't, there's the Trumpet Daily Show is our, I guess we could call our sister show, sister podcast. That's hosted by Trumpet executive editor Stephen Flurry. And that goes out every day live, largely on Rumble. YouTube's a little more restrictive on what you can talk about. We were forced off YouTube, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, talking about COVID. And so that show's moved over to Rumble pretty much exclusively. And then, of course, the podcast apps and all of that. But that focuses generally more on US news. But I had the opportunity to guest host the show on Tuesday. And that was the main focus of the show then, where I talked for much longer about what's been going on in Germany. Who is this alternative for Deutschland and their rise? The way that Germany has been radicalized because the mainstream refused to deal with migration, because the mainstream have invited in masses and masses of migrants, and the way that all of this is leading to the rise of a strong leader. So if you want more information, you can go and look there. And I would also really encourage you to go and look at the January edition of the Trumpet print edition if you've not read that already. And Mr. Flurry's article, I think this will be will go down as a real landmark and important article that we'll come back to quite a lot. After Trump's victory, watch Germany, where there are some bold statements about what we're seeing in Germany, about Germany heading into this time that just looks completely leaderless, where it's taking them quite a long time to have elections. A couple of election cycles ago, it took them 6 months to get together a coalition afterwards. This coalition is almost certainly not going to be strong and stable, but Germany needs strong and stable government. Look at all of the crises that are going around. And now look at the Christmas market attack. That's yet more pressure on Germany to have some strong and stable government. As they're in that situation, well, watch then for them to put someone into power by flatteries. Someone into power who doesn't come in through the normal election. Someone who comes into power kind of the same way that Kamala Harris became the number one leader of on the Democratic ticket, their candidate for president, where they didn't have the standard primary voting thing. She was just parachuted in there. Watch for someone in Germany to come along, and then watch for that person to be really transformational for Germany and for the world. That strong German leader is critical, pivotal for end time Bible prophecy. He is going to change the world. You need to know about him. and you need to know what the Bible says about him. And that article takes you through what the Bible says about him, and it shows you even who we think he may be, how he's going to come to power. And so that's just a critical article for understanding your world. So I think that's a one important story for this week. We have talked a fair bit about Latin America on this show, and I had another quote I just wanted to introduce this second segment with. This is what Mr. Flurry wrote all the way back in 2000, and he was writing this as America was formally handing over the Panama Canal back to Panama. And he wrote there, "I predict, based on history and the Bible, that the Panama Canal area will be a great curse to America in the near future. And that curse has already begun." That was in the year 2000. This week, we got dramatic confirmation that that is a fulfilled prophecy. That prediction has come to pass. And we got that confirmation talking about what a curse it's become from the next president of the United States, Donald Trump. And so here to tell us more about this story, we'll go now to the United States and hear from Andrew Miller.
Because I remember when the Panama Canal was handed back, I was about 14 years old, and Bill Clinton, I believe, was the one who gave it back. Jimmy Carter had made the deal earlier. George Bush never brought it up, or Barack Obama certainly never brought it up. I think I remember one presidential candidate who everyone's probably already forgotten about, Alan Keyes, who said he wanted to get it back. But this really has not been a talking point in America for the past 24 years. We just gave it back and kind of forgot about it. Well, all that time, China's been moving into the area, moving in its taking control of the toll booths on either side of it, even talking about getting military installations in other parts of Latin America. And Donald Trump has been about the first president in 24 years who's saying that, like, no, this is actually a huge problem for the United States. On the 22nd, he did a Truth Social post where he said, "The United States has a vested interest in the security, efficiency, and reliable operation of the Panama Canal, and that was always understood." And then a few days later, he did another post about how there's actually Chinese soldiers at the Panama Canal, which, if you just stop and think about it for a minute, we'll talk in a second about why Mr. Flurry knew that that was going to be a curse based on Bible prophecy. But just laying that aside for a second and just looking at, like, the common sense of why this is so important is that America is a huge continent-wide country with its industrial centers on the East Coast and the West Coast and a desert and a great big mountain range in the middle. So when you ship East Coast goods to California or West Coast goods to New York, much of that shipping, if not most of that shipping, it's like you're shipping it to a foreign country. You load it up on a big super tanker, you ship it through the Panama Canal, and that's the fastest, most efficient way to get those goods between, just to connect your country together. Not to mention the fact that it unites our Pacific and Atlantic fleet. Otherwise, it's almost like we have two navies because there's a huge continent in beside. So it unites our two fleets. It unites the two sides of our countries. Thousands of Americans died digging it because it's just such a vested interest for the United States. Now that we've given it back, I think we gave it back for $1, which is insane. And now you've got President Trump even getting here. This is his Christmas Day message. I'll skip his Christmas greeting and just say that he's giving greetings to the wonderful soldiers of China who are lovingly but illegally operating the Panama Canal, where we lost 38,000 people in its building 110 years ago. always making certain that the United States was billions of dollars in repair money. And so Donald Trump, first president in 24 years or so, that realizes that like this this isn't going to be able to stand. We need to make sure we have this gateway that connects the two sides of our country, that connects our two sides of our military, that we even fought pretty hard over for in World War II. This is some lesser-known World War II history, but there were some big U-boat battles in the Caribbean where the Nazis were trying to get the Panama Canal because they knew that was the fastest way to cripple American industry.
All right, they wouldn't need to conquer the Panama Canal either. They would just need to damage it sufficiently and then run away again. Because I think the idea of Germany occupying the Panama Canal can seem a little far-fetched, but they wouldn't even need to occupy it, would they?
Right. As long as you can, make it unusable. Like I said, America would have to go all the way around South America to get goods from its East Coast and its West Coast, which is going to be a major blow to its economy. And in a military sense, what's probably even more important is its navy's divided in half. We've got the 7th Fleet policing the South China Sea, and then we've got another fleet, I actually forget its number, policing the Mediterranean and the Atlantic. But in a crisis where you need to start moving ships around, that canal is absolutely vital. Which is why Mr. Fleury's had some very keen insight into this, because he actually just wrote a book not too many years ago titled China's Most Dangerous Move Against America, where he expands on something Mr. Armstrong said. Now, Mr. Armstrong, in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, mentions this prophecy to Abraham in Genesis 22, verse 17, that if you obey me, your descendants, the modern nations of Israel, will possess the gates of their enemies. And then there's another prophecy from Moses in Deuteronomy 28, verse 52, saying that if you rebel against me, you'll lose the gates of your enemies. And Mr. Armstrong pointing out that a gate is just a narrow passageway. And so when you're looking at a global scale, a sea gate are the gates like Gibraltar, the Suez Canal, the Straits of Malacca, the Straits of Bab el-Mandeb, the Panama Canal, these gates that ships use to bring world trade. And I think he even said at one point that the fact that the United States and Britain had all of these gates at one point, all of these sea gates, proved that they were the descendants of end-time Israel, even if you didn't know anything else about them. Now, in this book, China's Most Dangerous Move Against America, Mr. Fleury makes a note that if you look at the grammar, the Genesis 22:17 prophecy to Abraham about giving your descendants the gate of his enemy is singular. It's the gate. Where the Deuteronomy prophecy in Deuteronomy 28:52 says that if you rebel against me, you will lose the gates, plural. And granted, if you're going to lose gates, you have to have them first. So there's a more general prophecy that in Deuteronomy 28 that America and Britain would possess all the gates of your enemies. But this Genesis 22:17 one puts specific emphasis on one singular gate. That's the most important gate. Maybe not the most important sea gate on the planet, but definitely the most important sea gate to the end-time nations of Israel. And then identifies that gate as the Panama Canal. Now, there's less oil flows through the Panama Canal than flows through the Straits of Malacca, but the Straits of Malacca is more important to China than it is to us. It's nice that, you know, the British used to be in Singapore and we controlled that too. But it did not have nearly the central significance to the end time nations of Israel that the Panama Canal had, because America is the strongest of the English speaking peoples And the Panama Canal is the canal that unites the two halves of America's Navy and even unites the two shores of the United States. So you don't have to ship goods across the Great Plains and the Rocky Mountains and all these natural barriers. That if you lose the gate, now you're in a really big problem. And the book China's Most Dangerous Move Against America means that we've been in a Cold War with China for a long time, but probably the most dangerous thing China's done to defeat America is move in to start gaining more control over the canal. And Trump's been the first president in decades to really bring public attention to that fact.
And that book, I mean, that book is based off of that article from 10 years ago. And I do think, or 24 years ago, 25 years ago now, when that canal was handed over. And yeah, there's a lot of great insight. I don't normally read that article now because we've got the book that's more updated and has some very important additions, like you mentioned. But I just thought it was really interesting where he said it's going to be a curse. He talked about how that America handing over that canal is a symptom of U.S. weakness. And now you see someone like Donald Trump, who we've long said, well, he does stand for, he at least has a bit of pride in America's power and stands up for America. He's the one bringing it back. Or at least talking about bringing it back. I also just wanted to share, I really like this website. This is, I think, from like maritimetraffic.com. If you can stick my laptop screen up on the screen, George, there we go. It just shows you the location right now of ships around the world. And I think it's fascinating. Like, sea lanes are real. Boats do travel in lanes. They do go around the world through gates. I mean, it can sound like... The oceans are big. Two-thirds of the planet are oceans. You kind of think, well, boats would just kind of diffuse and really spread out across the earth. But you look at this and they don't. And so much of world trade goes around some critical choke points and sea gates. And yeah, throughout history, the nations that have controlled these choke points have been the world-dominating ocean nations. I mean, who the first empires to kind of become a global empire were kind of the Portuguese and the Spanish. And it was the Portuguese coming into a lot of these areas now that are these choke points. Sorry, we can't edit that out when we're live. But, coming over into India, South Africa. And then ultimately you had the Netherlands moving into some of these places, France and Britain. And ultimately it was Britain and America that got control of all of these major sea gates. And now... that's changing. And you have all of these Asian ones that China's getting control of. We've talked before about the importance of China getting control over the South China Sea. And you just look at a map like this and it makes very clear why that matters. But yeah, we can go over to Panama and see this massive concentration of ships that converge to come in through the Panama Canal. These are, when you're talking about gates on the national scale, you know, what does that mean? I mean, in one of, I think it's later on in, it's not the same passage you referenced, but when Rebecca is being betrothed to Isaac, her family say, well, be you mother over thousands of millions and possess the gates of your enemies. And what does that mean in the context of thousands of millions? But you look at these kind of maps, it's very clear that that is referring to sea gates. These are the gates of... the gates of enemies, the gates of thousands of millions. So an important story. And also that book that you mentioned, China's Most Dangerous Move Against America. That's that does not take long to read. That's a short little booklet. I mean, we do throw out quite a lot of material on this show. Somebody left the comment. I keep meaning to respond on YouTube saying, well, could you give more scripture references rather than just saying the Bible says this and the Bible says that? And I think that's a fair point, and I think we can try and do that. But part of the reason we don't is a show like this, we're giving you a summary of the news, and we would love for you to get to order these books and get all of the scripture references for yourselves. And you know, we know a lot of you, you're not sitting there where you can open a Bible or write down a scripture reference. These books will give you the opportunity to come back later and study and turn to those scripture references and see this for yourself. So absolutely, we do want you to study this and prove it for yourself. And I think I will take that on board, and we will try and throw out a few more specifics for those that want them during the show. But we do really want to as well make it clear, you can go, you can get those scriptures and you can look at that and study that. And China's Most Dangerous Move Against America, if you've thought about doing that for a while, this is a great way just to dip your toe in and see what some of our books and booklets are like, because it's a short little booklet, easy to understand. And you can download it on our website. You can order your own free print copy and we'll ship it to you for free in the post. And again, there's no follow-up. We don't come back after you asking for donations or anything like that. We just pop it in the post, send that off to you. But the other thing I'd like to point to is our Key of David program. I mentioned this last time. I haven't watched the program. I have just seen the title. But I know that Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry recorded his Key of David program this week on Panama. So that will be out next week on Friday. That goes out on various TV channels all around the US. You can look up the TV listings on our website, but that's why there's a bit more of a delay there. It's got to be produced and then sent out to all of these TV stations and go through all of their processes. But you can look out for that. You can subscribe to the Key of David YouTube channel, or the Key of David is, I believe, on Rumble as well. You can go to our website. And I just really encourage you to keep yourself up to date with that show as it comments on. And you'll get, I don't know what's in that show. I guarantee you will get a unique perspective, though, on what we've seen from Panama. Was there anything else, Andrew, you wanted to add onto that story? Or did you want to kind of go on and talk about some of the other stories that you had for the Anglosphere, the English-speaking world?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a number of other stories. In other Seagate news, Trump's also trying to purchase Greenland, which definitely hasn't been as important of a Seagate in the past, but could in the future. The planet's, well, most people believe that the planet's kind of been coming out of a mini ice age since about 1750. The North Shore of Canada's getting more navigable. Because the planet's a sphere, if you could ship goods from Europe by Greenland along the North Shore of Panama into Asia, you could cut the shipping time from Europe to Asia down by at least a week. It's another example of some forward thinking to be like, that's another Seagate that the America is interested in, but we know from Bible prophecy that, like, God promised to take those away from you if you don't repent. So unless there's mass repentance in America, this just becomes a lot of talk. There's also the story that the U.S. government, the Biden administration, is trying to do as much damage as it can as it goes out the door, trying to fill 33 new diversity, equity, and inclusion jobs in the United States before Trump takes office, to get even more woke bureaucrats in the U.S. deep state that Trump will have to deal with. In the United Kingdom, King Charles III gave his Christmas address, really praising both the nation and the Commonwealth for how they reacted to the anti-immigrant protests last summer that broke out after a second-generation Rwandan immigrant stabbed three girls. Really highlighting just the curse that mass immigration has become on Britain, and also highlighting how little Britain's leaders, including the royal family, seem interested in solving this problem, actually preferring to praise the nation for banding together after the protesters, but not really addressing what had made the protesters angry in the first place.
And it's pretty controversial for the royal family. I mean, this speech is meant to be non-political. I mean, for those of you that are not British, like, the King's speech or the Queen's speech, as it has been for most of our lives, like, it used to be, that would be, like, a lot of families all across the nation would stop whatever they're doing on Christmas Day. I think it's 3 p.m. or something, mid-afternoon. And they would, the entire country would watch the Queen's speech. And now it's the King's speech. So it's meant to be a pretty big nation moment of national unity. It's non-political. It's meant to talk about, you kind of big themes and important themes, but to then make actually what's quite a divisive speech and something that's quite a political issue is something that has garnered King Charles a lot of criticism and has brought, I think, the royal, you know, it's brought the royal family very much into politics now, where also this week Reform UK became the largest British political party. They had more members now, like just rank and file members, than the Conservative Party. Not more members in Parliament, that's a very different thing, but just, you know, your man on the street who joins a political party. And so for King Charles to take a side that is against that, I mean, you're bringing the monarchy into politics in kind of a dangerous way, in a way that really risks eroding support for the British monarchy. So that's another important angle to this, and something that we've also talked about a fair bit. And if you look back through our archives, there's a Trumpet cover where there's the Queen on the front cover with the decline of the royal family that takes you through what we're watching for there and what is prophesied there. So I think that's, yeah, and it's an important story. I'm glad you brought that one up. And I think you had one or two more, Andrew.
Yeah, and then actually my last one, I should have put this one at the beginning to try to make a theme, but Australia's government is trying to counter China's influence by making a security deal with the Solomon Islands, which brings us full round circle back to the Seagate theme with Donald Trump talking about how America needs to take back Panama and we need to buy Greenland, and Australia wants to make a security pact with the Solomon Islands, just really to keep all these sea lanes open. So if that's kind of the theme of the Anglo-American news this week, is the fact that when the Bible prophesies a foreign enemy conquering America, Britain, Canada, Australia, some of those prophecies are hard to wrap your mind around just because America's military is so powerful. But they, it really does spell it out for you that their master strategy to bring America down weak enough that they can actually conquer it is to choke off world trade using these sea gates. China has Panama. China has the Solomon Islands. Greenland is not an EU member, but it's part of the Kingdom of Denmark, which is. So it's definitely got close ties to the EU. You can definitely see where the big battle for world supremacy is being fought right now.
Great. Thank you for that, Andrew. Actually, if you want to stick my computer on the screen, you can see we've got the Solomon Islands here. And again, you kind of have a series of sea gates around Australia. I just find it really interesting the way all of these ships just can't travel in these narrow lines. And the Solomon Islands are an important place for guarding some of those narrow lines of ships heading down to Australia. So these are important stories to watch. Well, thank you so much for that, Andrew. Jeremiah, for Asia, I think you had a slightly different story as the main story, but just maybe first off, I think the most eye-catching story from Asia, the one I've gotten the most questions about just in conversation from people this week, has been the downing of this airline from Azerbaijan, and what's starting to look like the second time Russia has shot down a passenger jet. So would you mind maybe just briefly telling us a little bit about that one to start with before we get to your main story?
Sure, yes. This was a commercial international passenger flight that was in the sky on Wednesday. This was Azerbaijan Airlines flight 8243 from Baku, Azerbaijan, and it was headed to the city of Grozny in southern Russia. And it was full of civilian passengers from several countries, but it was struck over Russia by what authorities in Azerbaijan say was shrapnel from a Russian surface-to-air missile. Now, it looks like this was unintentional on Russia's part, but shrapnel from one of their missiles hit the plane, and then Russia denied this plane permission to do an emergency landing in Russian territory, even though the Russians were the ones who badly damaged it. I guess Russia just didn't want to have to clean up the mess. But the plane flew on, and it ended up crash landing in Kazakhstan, and 38 of the passengers were killed during that emergency landing, and many others were badly injured. And analysts are saying that had this plane been allowed to land in Russia shortly after it was hit, then the casualties would have been far less severe. But in either case, though, this brings back chilling memories of Malaysian Airlines flight MH17. That's a commercial plane that Russia shot down over Ukraine back in 2014. And that one killed 298 people. So a major tragedy. And I'd like to read very briefly what Trump Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury wrote about MH17 at that time. He wrote, "The tragedy killed 298 people in what was either a disgusting mistake made by some of Russian President Vladimir Putin's zealots or an intentional act of terrorism. Either way, Putin created the conditions that led to the disaster and bears responsibility. The outcry from the West was loud but toothless, and Putin didn't back down or show even a hint of remorse." So that was what Mr. Fleury wrote back in 2014 when Russia killed hundreds of civilians by downing a commercial airplane. And Mr. Fleury pointed out that the Western outcry was loud but toothless. And now here we are a few years later, and Russia has done it again because there were no consequences. You know, no one really pushes back in a meaningful way when Russia does these kinds of things. And it just shows that Russia is continuing to push the world into a dangerous new era.
Now, when you say shrapnel hit the plane, do you know whether they were targeting the plane or whether they, like, did the missile hit a Ukrainian drone, say, and some shrapnel then went on to hit the plane? Or do we just not know yet? I'm sure Russia's not being exactly cooperative with this.
Right. From what the Azerbaijani authorities have said, it seems unintentional. This was an area in Russia where Russia was apparently targeting Ukrainian drones that were in the skies, I think, targeting a weapons depot nearby. So it was unintentional from what we can tell. But as you said, the investigation is ongoing, and Russia is notoriously uncooperative with these sorts of things, so it would be difficult to know all the exact details of it.
All right, and then your main story is also very dramatic, but kind of a story that we're starting to get numb to, I think, because it's part of a war that's been going on for, are we getting coming up to 2 years now? Coming up to three. 3 years now, wow. So, yeah, definitely. You know, it's a big deal, but also one that because it's been going on for so long, we tend to ignore. So can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Yes. Well, yeah, the big story is just that Russia's war on Ukraine rages on. We are approaching the 3-year anniversary of this horrendous war. And on Wednesday, Russia fired one of the largest aerial barrages of the entire war. There were 78 missiles altogether, including some caliber cruise missiles and also some KH-59s and KH-69s. And then there were also 106 drones, including about 50 of the Iranian Shahed drones. Now, the Ukrainian Air Force was able to intercept the bulk of these, but several of them evaded defenses and got through and struck their targets. And the targets here were almost all part of Ukraine's power and energy infrastructure. DTEC is Ukraine's largest energy provider, and they sustained widespread damage from this attack. There were also some people killed from it and several injured, even though that wasn't the primary purpose of the attack. The primary purpose, you know, it was just designed to put Ukrainian civilians, as many of them as possible, in the cold and in the dark during the frigid winter. And it succeeded very well in that. More than 500,000 homes and businesses were left without power. So that means well over 1 million people. And these were overwhelmingly civilians, just regular people. And Ukraine right now is experiencing near freezing temperatures. So, of course, that's why Russia focuses so much on the energy grid during the winter months. It's all just designed to maximize the suffering of as many people as possible in hopes of wearing the Ukrainians down and in hopes of maybe even making them pull away their support for their government fighting against Russia and just making them want to put pressure on their government to just give up and give in to Russia. And it's also notable that this major attack happened on December 25th. That's the day that Ukraine celebrates Christmas. And that is a new development for Ukraine. Up until last year, they celebrated Christmas on January 7th instead, which is the day that Russia observes it. But Ukrainian authorities changed that back in 2023. They changed it just in an effort to distance Ukraine from Russia and to draw nearer to Europe and to the calendar that the Europeans use. So that change, of course, infuriated Russia. And it was no coincidence that the massive attack this week was timed for December 25th. Russia fired tens of millions of dollars worth of missiles and drones just to freeze Ukrainians and to show them that Russia does not plan to ever let them pull away from Russia and align with Europe. And then just another update with the war this week, we also saw Russia gaining more ground, making more gains toward the Ukrainian city of Pokrovsk. That's in southern Donetsk. Russia is inching closer to it, just a few yards at a time, and it's coming at great cost in terms of human lives. But Russia's pushing really hard here toward Pokrovsk because it's a key logistics hub. So if they're able to capture it, it would be a major setback for Ukraine and for Ukraine's abilities to move weapons and men to the front lines. And it would also be a major success for Russia, which could lead to some other big breakthroughs. So it is significant to see Russia really edging closer there. But it was not all good news for the Russians this week. On Saturday, the Ukrainians struck a high-rise building in Kazan, Russia. This appears to have been a weapons development facility. And it's more than 600 miles from the Ukrainian border, so deep inside of Russia. So that shows that Ukraine is able to attack deeper and deeper in Russian territory. And then the very next day, Ukraine also destroyed a major ammunition depot in Katimovsky, Russia. And then I believe it was just a day or two after that that Russia lost a major cargo ship in the Mediterranean Sea. This was in between Algeria and Spain. The ship was called the Ursa Major cargo ship. There were some massive cranes on board and also some other equipment apparently intended for Russia's icebreaker fleet. And we don't yet know the cause of its sinking, but that came just days after Russia lost a couple of oil tankers in the Black Sea due to a big storm that was underway there. So some pretty notable losses there for Russian shipping power and economic power. These are some economic blows, and they'll slow Russia down a little bit, but they won't be enough, nearly enough, to stop the Russian war machine. So the war keeps raging.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I do find this the way that the Russia-Ukraine war has become taken on this religious dimension over the last 10 years or more, especially, well, even going back to the 1990s, where you've had various different waves of the Orthodox Church break away in Ukraine, I find just fascinating. And then the way that Ukraine is really now, as a result of this war, kind of shifting out of the Orthodox world and into the Catholic world. I mean, it shows the power some of these conflicts can have on wars. On religion. I think it ties back even to the Magdeburg attack and the way that you can see Europe in some ways becoming more Christian now, as a result, in part because of all of these Muslim migrants. And these Muslim attacks, or these attacks from the Middle East, it's a similar dynamic. I think PJ Media had a good piece today where they were talking about just the rise of Christianity. I think you had the largest ever number at a kind of a mass baptism in France. That might have been over Easter, but you're having people become more religious as a result of that. And we're seeing, even with all of these enemies, with all of these people attacking Europe, the rise of the Catholic Church in that respect, is it something that holds, that has a common heritage for all of Europe? So that's, I think, a really important part of this story. And we've long forecast the rise of that church. And you can see more about that in our book, The Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy. And in a week where this world is celebrating Christmas, you know, the power of the Catholic Church and its influence is very much on display as, you know, there's a lot of focus on the Pope and the message that he is giving and things like that. So, you know, I think you do see the rise of that Catholic heritage all across Europe. But the rise of this strongman in Germany, the rise of this strongman in Russia and Vladimir Putin and everything that he's doing, that's another important element of fulfilled prophecy.
Yes, that's right. And I think that the developments this week, you know, particularly Russia's massive aerial barrages on Ukraine and also its slow grind toward Pokrovsk, these show that Vladimir Putin's ambitions remain undiminished, even though we are 3 years in, far longer than anyone would have expected this war to last. He remains as fiercely determined as ever to conquer Ukraine, no matter how many millions of dollars have to be spent in the process, no matter how many Russian lives or Ukrainian lives are lost in the process. And whatever happens in the short term, Bible prophecy does show that Putin will emerge from this conflict still as a strong man. And he'll go on to fight in much larger wars in the future. We mentioned scriptural references. If the listener there would like one of those for that claim, probably the best one to go to would be in the book of Ezekiel, chapters 38 and 39, really go in depth about this Russian leader. And we have a free booklet. This is called The Prophesied Prince of Russia. And it really explains those chapters in detail, along with related passages. Just goes into a lot of depth about Putin's role in the final world war as well. So this is The Prophesied Prince of Russia. And this is a booklet that we send out for free, just like all of our literature, to anyone who would like a copy. So I hope that you'll visit thetrumpet.com and order your free copy of this booklet there.
And like so many of our stories, well, today and in so many of the shows, it's something that powerfully points you to fulfilled prophecy. And just even since Mr. Flowery wrote that book, there have been several predictions in there, like Vladimir Putin invading other former Soviet countries as he tries to rebuild the Soviet empire, that have been fulfilled, to the point that in our latest Trumpet print, we have an infographic in the middle there. The top 10 fulfilled, or I don't know if it's top 10, but 10 fulfilled Bible prophecies. I don't know how you could quite rank them and say this is the number one and it beats the number two. I don't think that's quite the intent, but it's certainly 10 important fulfilled pieces of Bible prophecy. And the front cover of that Trumpet print magazine is one that also points to a massive piece of fulfilled Bible prophecy, and that is what is going on in Syria. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flowery has the cover article there that, well, there's the title, Syria's Fall, Another Key Prophecy Fulfilled. That is the massive takeaway from what is happening. And we talked about this on Wednesday's show as well, where Mr. Flowery made this bold prediction based on Bible prophecy 12 years ago, saying in an article how the Syrian crisis will end. And the way that he said it would end would be Syria broken away from Iran and in Europe's orbit. And just like we talked about on the show last week, Syria has broken away from Iran. The Iranian embassy has been ransacked, and European diplomats are all over the place looking at setting up their embassies. So that's a dramatic fulfilled prophecy. That's the most important aspect of all of these stories, is they point you to the Bible and they point you to God. And they show you that God rules in the kingdom of men, and he rules in what's going on in the world, and he rules in your life. And if we want to have prosperity and success, well, we need to know that ruling God and obey him and listen to him. But and that's going to unlock success and prosperity in your life. And when the world does that, that's going to unlock success and prosperity for the whole world. But that kind of signal of fulfilled prophecy makes watching what happens in Syria very important. And so for our final main story, we'll go to Mihailo, who's got an update of some of what is happening in Syria.
Yes, technically this story happened hours after Assad fell on December 8th, but it's a trend that's been continuing, and there's been some updates, and we haven't really talked about it on the program too much yet. So now's as good a time as any to get into that, and that would be Turkey, or rather Turkish-backed troops, fighting the Kurds in that northeastern corner of Syria. Specifically, I'm talking about the Syrian National Army, that ragtag group of militias that's basically Turkey's avatar to accomplish its interests in Syria. And the Syrian Democratic Forces, which is like the main umbrella group for the different Kurdish groups fighting in northern Syria there. Almost immediately after Assad fell, within hours actually, back in December 8th, the SNA took the Kurdish city of Manbij, which is, again, fairly pretty close to the Turkish border. And since then, there's been continued skirmishes for this particular city. The Kurds, since at least December 24th, had launched a counteroffensive to try and take it back. But around the same time, the SNA also took control of the Tishrin Dam, which is a very important hydroelectric dam on the Euphrates River in that area. So there is a bit more escalation. Turkey itself is also getting involved, where they their air force struck the bigger city of Kobani in Kurdistan there, and according to a Kurdish source that spoke to the Free Press, that was at least half a week ago, so maybe it's a little out of date, but they said that they're expecting an invasion of that city by Turkey's proxy forces any day now. And the reason why this is so important is because the Syrian Democratic Forces, this Kurdish group, they are a United States proxy. They get hundreds of millions of dollars of funding from the U.S. every year. I think, if memory serves me right, last year it was like $158 million just for them alone, aside from all the other humanitarian aid going to different parts of Syria. There are American troops on the ground in Syrian Kurdistan, which is by far the largest area of Syria that the U.S., or largest number of troops where the U.S. has a presence in Syria. And Turkey, who on paper is a NATO ally, and sometimes you'll even hear people talk about that, okay, maybe there's some unsavory stuff going on in Syria, but Turkey, you know, it is our ally. They know what they're doing, etc. This is good news for the Western cause. They're literally fighting a proxy war between the United States now. Maybe it's small scale, maybe, I mean, it's no news that the Turks have never really liked the Kurds that much for some of the unrest and independence fighting that they've had in Turkey with the Kurdish population there. The Turks, for their part, claim that the Syrian Kurds have connections with those Turkish-Kurdish groups that they claim are terrorist groups. But still, again, these are two supposedly allies fighting against each other. For the U.S.'s part, okay, maybe they're not necessarily pushing back on Turkey that much in regards of actually telling President Erdogan there to back down or whatever, but on December 19th, up until this point, we've known that the U.S. has about 900 troops in Syria, most of them in that Kurdistan area. There's a few in the south that we've talked before in this program. And then on December 19th, they announced that that number has bumped up to 2,000. Most of those most likely going to, again, Kurdistan there. So even if diplomacy is not getting anywhere, you're literally having the U.S. bring in more boots on the ground in Syrian Kurdistan there. And Turkey's still pushing at the offensive, at least where they are. I mean, does no one see how this could, even if they're not necessarily intentionally trying to attack America, they certainly know that with this escalation, something wrong could very well happen, and they're still pushing ahead with it, despite whatever anybody in the government or otherwise in America wants.
So Turkey's being a punk. They've been they do this. They've done this for 10 years or more because they have the Dardanelles, because they control the Seagate. We're back to Seagates. They control the vital Seagate for Russia's warm water ports. They get to say whether the Russian fleet has access to the Mediterranean or not. Without that, nearest Russian ports are miles away and frozen or in the Baltic or all the way over near Japan. And so because of that, they can kind of get away with doing whatever they like. And everyone always turns a blind eye to all of their misbehaviors because they want to keep them in NATO and they don't want them going over to Russia's side. That dynamic in that behavior that we're seeing this week, that is in fact a fulfilled prophecy, or certainly a prophecy that's a long way to build towards being fulfilled.
Yes. We've been talking about Turkey, including our predecessor institution, The Plain Truth, and Editor-in-Chief Herbert W. Armstrong, about Turkey taking these kinds of moves since at least the 1970s, at least in bigger public ways. Back then, Turkey was the first Muslim country to recognize Israel. It joined NATO. It was a functioning European democracy, you could say. It looked like probably the West's best friend in the Middle East. But Mr. Armstrong, through analyzing passages like in the Book of Obadiah, for example, which talks about Edom or the Edomites, the ancestral peoples of modern Turkey. And we have a book that Mr. Fleury has written called The King of the South that goes into a little bit more detail about what that entails, how that factors into prophecy, etc. But specifically, Obadiah talks about the Turks, the Edomites, in these latter days attacking Jacob, attacking those nations of Israel that you and Andrew were talking about earlier, the United States, Britain, and of course the Jewish state. And Erdogan is very much not a friend of Israel, the state of Israel, and that's very apparent with a lot of what he's been doing years ago and what he's doing in Syria right now. But he's also not a friend of America and Britain either. And we have a couple of articles, one from this latest print edition, one from a few years back. The latest one is called Turkey's Sacred Quest by our correspondent here, Josue Michels, and another one that I wrote a couple years ago called The Ottoman Empire Strikes Back, which talks a bit about what exactly this means for modern Turkey, how they could possibly hurt the end-time nations of Israel, and why, again, when you see him oust Bashar al-Assad, when you see him kick the Russians out of the Mediterranean, you can think, okay, this is a victory for the West. Maybe Erdogan is shoring up his credentials a little bit. Maybe he's on our side after all. He is very much not. And even if he doesn't stick around in the long term, he is fairly old and he's been around for a while. So he may not necessarily be the Turkish leader to do it. But either way, there's millions and millions of people in Turkey that support what he's doing. His own armed forces support what he's doing and the direction he's taking Turkey. And the fact that we're having a very visible proxy war in Syria right now between the United States and Turkey, again, on paper, NATO allies, is, I think, a very clear demonstration of that.
All right. Well, we are just about out of time. You still have a couple more stories. Do you think you can get through them in about a minute?
We'll see. So on Thursday, the Israel Defense Forces struck multiple targets in Yemen, including the proclaimed capital, Sana'a, going after the Houthi rebels after they launched several projectiles over the past few days, including a missile that bypassed the Iron Dome defense and hit the Tel Aviv area last Saturday, at least as the IDF reported last Saturday. And a bit of an interesting one, tying in with Europe. On January 27th this year is the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz by the Red Army in World War II. You can imagine it's a very big international event. Poland's inviting a lot of people over to see that. But they said that if Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu comes in, they're going to be legally obligated to arrest him, based off of the international criminal court proceedings, which we've talked about plenty of times on this show before. France has already said that they're not going to respect the ruling. Germany's already said that. Poland said they would. When the leader of the Jewish state is going to, or at least has the potential to go to the liberation of Auschwitz ceremony, and he's being under threat of arrest for that, I think that goes a long way on showing just how much the world has turned against the Jews and just how much people have turned away from the message of the Holocaust and what symbols like Auschwitz stand for.
I think it does. Thank you very much for that. And I think it also points to a fulfilled prophecy that Herbert W. Armstrong was right there at the opening of the United Nations and said, I don't see the seeds of peace being sown here, but the seeds of the next war. And now this United Nations, this organization that was built, you kind of never again is almost in their purpose. It's why that they were put together, to prevent another world war. And now the United Nations and then these other affiliated legal organizations like the International Criminal Court are leading the world in spreading anti-Semitism and attacking Jews. I mean, it shows the utter failure of these institutions that we have built up to try and produce peace. And that is one of the messages of this show, a man's utter failure to rule himself and to bring peace to himself and for himself. But it's not the most important message of this show. The most important message of this show is instead to point you to God, who does have the answers and who does have the solutions. And yes, okay, to look to God, we do need to see that we don't have those solutions ourselves. Otherwise, we're going to look for those solutions within ourselves. But there's a God in heaven who has forecast all of these events so precisely. And every single week, as you sit down like we've done today and you talk about, well, what are the big news events of the week? You see Bible prophecy and you see God. And that is what we want to get across on this show. You know, that is why we'd really encourage you to go and look at those different pieces of literature and books and booklets. And I think we'll try and get some notes up in the description. I guess we'll have to look at how we do that now that we're live rather than updating the show or rather than posting the show. But certainly sooner or later, we'll have some links there, or you can go to our website, thetrumpet.com. I'll put in another plug for that. China's Most Dangerous Move Against America was a great short piece to get involved in and to read that. Well, thank you so much to all of our panelists for joining us. Thank you to the 50 or so, or maybe a bit more. Twitter's a little more opaque on its live stat viewers, but all of those that have been joining us for this show, we really appreciate that. If you're listening to this later and you didn't get the message about us going live, well, you can join us next week. We'll be back at the same time. 8:30 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, 8:30 a.m. Central Standard Time, 2:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Thank you very much to Isaac Lorenz and George Haddad for engineering and production. And we will still be having our regular Wednesday shows, which we will be pre-recording and giving a little bit more polish in the production of, and posting those as usual sometime Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday evening. For the UK time, I guess probably about midday on Wednesday for everyone else. So that will be back with that on Wednesday. And until then, keep watching your world.